Okay, it is the 24th of February, and this is part one, for the benefit of the podcast. I know it's not really a podcast, it's an audio recording, but, you know, humor me. Of licensing for the internet, and related to that, international law of licensing. Now, why is this a different topic? Why is licensing for the internet different? In some ways, it's because people don't necessarily think about and understand the unique nature of the internet as a medium and the diverse nature of the internet as a medium. And so if one is licensing something that may be used in other platforms and other media and other places and for the internet, it's critically important to do that up front. It's critically important to think these things through because, given the scope of the internet, having to go back afterwards and reopen negotiations for that sort of thing is a very expensive proposition. So I want to introduce you to the unique issues that arise from licensing online. And let's start actually with some news stories, which turn out to have very significant relevance here. You may have seen this yesterday. I don't know if anyone here could be a Comcast subscriber. We don't really have yet. Comcast being a service provider here in the New York metro area, I guess New Jersey does. But in any event, it was noticed recently that Netflix was slowing down on Comcast. And it was announced over the weekend that A, Comcast was throttling, was purposely figuring out which things going across its network were Netflix traffic and slowing them down, which then enabled Comcast to successfully negotiate with Netflix a faster channel. This is what net neutrality is about. If you've heard that phrase, net neutrality, what it refers to is the ideal that network providers may not, will not discriminate across the types of traffic that are going to go across their networks. That they're providing you the pipe. You pay for a certain speed of pipe, and then whatever comes across that pipe gets treated equally. We don't have discrimination of the net, of the phone calls, which calls are allowed to get through on, well, the providers don't determine that. We may by putting our names on do not call lists and the like, but the telephone company is not allowed to decide which calls you'll get and which calls it doesn't want to send to you. And that's because it's a common carrier that has certain responsibilities. But internet service providers are not. In fact, we had a recent decision of the Supreme Court that confirmed, at least for now, that the Federal Trade Commission, how it regulates or mandates this neutrality, or mandated this neutrality among internet service providers, it didn't have the authority to do it the way it was going to do it. So we don't really think about our internet service providers as choosing our content. We don't want them to do that. Unless we're signing up for very specific types of internet service providers, there are communities that sign on to particular providers that guarantee filters, that certain things are just not going to get through. Child safe, whatever it is, some things will, some things won't. And obviously, or not obviously, but if you're aware, other countries often nationally filter the content that is permitted into their country over the internet. But we don't have that model. We have private companies. Yeah.
Well,
That's not this, right? So when things are blocked, and believe me, I could go off for hours on spam block filters. It's one of my things. How the providers of the filters are essentially immune from anything they do, even maliciously. But that's, we could talk about that. So, but your provider is not keeping that spam, that those spam messages from coming into its network. What it's doing is it's saying, okay, it's in my network, and then either you tell it to filter or it filters certain things, but that's not based on who's sending it. That's based on particular messages, and usually you're the one as the subscriber saying, yes, please, will you turn on spam filtering? But that's a particular message. What this is saying is a particular type of content. It's as if your provider would say, you don't get email today. Now, I did see one comment online about this that suggested that this is a fairly common business model among certain communities in New Jersey. The protection model. Oh, you wanna do well with our network? Well, why don't you pay us, and then everything's gonna go fine. But this highlights the fact that the content, Netflix is paying, right? Netflix licenses content from movie companies in order to provide it to you as a subscriber, or me as a subscriber. We pay for that. And we don't think, and it's not part of our deal with Netflix, that we also have to pay Comcast to allow us to do that. But the reason I put this up is because in thinking about a licensing transaction, you have to consider the delivery mechanism of the content, of the intellectual property. How is it getting from licensor to licensee? And does the license agreement take that into account? If Netflix is depending on studios to provide it with content, how is it getting very different context? But so Netflix to the user, the delivery mechanism is the internet service provider. And the internet service provider can turn to Netflix and say, you have all these business relationships with subscribers, with our customers that you're dealing with directly. You've already committed to providing them with this content and you're taking their money. And if you want to continue to be able to do that and not deal with their complaints, this really does sound very much like a protection racket in a lot of ways. That you're going to have to pay us extra to get access to our customers in the way that you'd been doing before.
So I'm just trying to think, the question is interesting as far as how do you safeguard yourself against this in future contracts?
Who's the you in that question?
If you're Netflix, right?
If you're Netflix.
So is it, and I guess I don't know enough about how they're transmitting, is it a bandwidth issue? Can you put sort of an obligation in there that Comcast or the service provider needs to provide a minimum amount of bandwidth for Netflix at all times or something along those lines?
I would imagine that this is going to be the kind of agreement that will be filed with the Securities and Exchange Commission.
Right.
Right. This is going to be a material agreement probably for Netflix. And so we'll have a sense of what the terms are.
Right.
But, you know, how does Netflix deal with this? Well, the problem is, once Netflix pays ransom to one kidnapper,
right, this is precedent. This is gonna
right?
happen everywhere. Yeah.
So you know that Fios is lining up, Cablevision is lining up.
Sure.
Right? Now this may
go after Hulu, everybody else too, right? I'm assuming anybody who streams content.
You would think.
Right?
Although the amount of bandwidth that Netflix takes up in a tip, it is an astonishing percentage. One can see Comcast's point. So there are lots of ways that this can play out. This can play out with Netflix having to enter into all these agreements and suddenly becoming more expensive as a result, or all of these streaming deals becoming more expensive. This can play out as being deemed so heavy-handed by the Comcasts of the world that it triggers the kind of forced network neutrality that they're trying to avoid. And you wonder if that happens, right? If the law changes, whether through the Federal Communications Commission or through Congress, and network neutrality is imposed upon Comcast, what happens to that agreement? Is it like a patent license after the patent expires? I would hope, and I would imagine they probably both pay their lawyers enough, that this agreement becomes null and void to the extent that a statutory mandate forces Comcast to provide equal access. There are a lot of ways this can play out. Look, there's nothing stopping Netflix from changing its business model and saying, instead of you, the subscriber, connecting directly with me, Netflix, it's going to be a value-added service like a cable network. So if you, it's part of your package from Comcast. You could get the Netflix package from Comcast or the no Netflix package from Comcast, just like Showtime, just like HBO. And you as a consumer are going to have to choose which services you want to come through your internet connection. We don't think of our internet connections that way right now. But one version of how this plays out is we have to, which could then impede innovation and everything else. Yeah. Their terms of service, you mean? Well, they could change their pricing at any point, right? As long as you don't have, they change their pricing all the time. And as long as you don't have some sort of a fixed term contract. If you're month to month with Netflix, as I think most people are, I don't think Netflix has an annual agreement. Netflix can change its pricing because it wants to. Whether it's passing this on or it just wants to, you know, increase its profits. And we've seen it do that. Amazon is also looking at perhaps making Prime more expensive, although that's right now being driven by shipping charges. There's nothing forcing us as consumers to use Netflix. We just like to. But this is a really challenging thing. Now, the other side of the equation. So Netflix has to think about delivery from both ends. And it's not part of this, but it's a nice highlight, and it leads nicely into the internet issues today. Netflix has contracts with all the various movie studios that it does to retransmit their copyrighted films. What format does Netflix need those films to be delivered in? Is it enough? Does it serve Netflix's purpose to simply have the rights to do it, then go out to Walmart and buy a DVD? I'm not about to answer that question, but understand in thinking about it, Netflix has certain technical needs. It needs the content to be delivered in some specific formats that have a lot to do with how it then converts it and streams it. And so in the license agreement that it signs not with us as users, but the movie studios, one of the terms of that license agreement, like any license agreement, is in what format will that content be delivered? Will it be delivered with specific language audio tracks embedded in it? Will it be delivered in certain resolutions, on certain media? What does Netflix need? And it needs to put that into the contract, or it can't be sure, regardless of the right to show a film, it can't be sure that it will have the ability to show the film. So in drafting contracts where your clients are the licensees and they need the content in a certain format to be useful, that has to become a term of the license agreement. Here's another interesting licensing article from the last 24 hours. And that is, and again, we're talking about telecom companies and their right to market the data we, their subscribers, provide to them. Have we licensed our usage information, our identities, our preferences to them for them to market? Data businesses. Big data. You're also seeing this very similar discussions Senator Schumer quoted in Newsday about the data collection by automobile manufacturers that are putting all sorts of sensors, including GPS sensors, into the cars they sell. And what are they doing with those data? What are they permitted to do? And some of that's legal. But some of that is licensed to the extent that they are our proprietary data. We, the drivers, we, the users, are we knowingly or unknowingly licensing those data to them? Do we need to be asked? I keep coming back to privacy because there are so many crossover issues in terms of licensing and rights. Even if it's not per se intellectual property. Had a client question come up in my the firm to which I'm counsel. They were buying, client that's buying an online property. And they're buying the assets of this online property, gonna continue to operate it as a going concern. The question was, what are the privacy issues? And the privacy issues are essentially like license terms. Under what terms did the users of the site license their personal information? How do we know? We look at the privacy policy. That's what a privacy policy is, a notice. It's saying, here are the terms under which you, the user, agree to let us collect and use your personal information. It's not a sale. It's a license. It doesn't use that word, but that's what it is. And one of the things that our client has to consider is it's not allowed to violate that license because those are the terms under which those data were collected. So this becomes not only issues of privacy law, but licenses from the users. Permission to use my intellectual property, my information, in ways other than to support my business relationship with you. And it's true not only of telecoms, but of banks, of governments, of universities, although universities are more likely to experience data breaches. Anyone here a Maryland alum? That was the latest, last week. I have a friend, a couple nieces who are Maryland alumni, someone I know who said his social security number was in fact compromised, but he never got any notice from Maryland. No Maryland alumni in the room? Big data breach last week.
I literally just got something from Stony Brook.
Again?
That there needs to be an operating iOS patch.
Oh, well, yeah, that's not the data. That's, there's a security issue floating around for iPads and iPods, and
yeah,
that there's some security gap, and you need to update your device. That's not a Stony Brook issue per se. That's an everybody running one of those little devices, and it's not that, you know, other devices aren't subject. That's just the security hole of the day. So you see, networks are interesting because networks carry data, carry information, carry intellectual property. And the internet is not a thing. It's not one kind of connection. And it's not one kind of use. And so you need to think broadly about the internet. The first thing they think about use on the internet is on the web, a website. Yes, but these are not the same thing. The web is not the internet any more than a fax is the telephone network or a caboose is the railroad system. It is one type of thing using this network, but only one of many. Email? Why would you need to license something for email? Well, if you look at much of your email, it's got graphics in it. Marketing messages, newsletters. They have photos, they have graphics, they have all sorts of intellectual property. They have brands and trademarks. And you know what? If people are using those things commercially and they are required to license them, the use has to include use not only on a website, but in an email message. Apps. Apps may be delivered through the internet. They may connect in real time over the internet. And does the app publisher have the rights to use the intellectual property contained within the app? Think about some of your favorite apps, other than the flappy ones. Your sort of multimedia content apps. Netflix app, prime example. Netflix is delivering not only through its website, but through a dedicated standalone app. Did its license from the movie company think about this. Netflix drafts its license. Oh, how are we going to deliver? We're going to deliver, because the license was 10 years ago or 5 years ago, through our website, Netflix.com. That's fine. Except now Netflix wants to have an app. Again, hypothetically speaking, looks back at its license agreement. They didn't include apps. What do you do? Cable channels now have their own apps. And they're very interesting, cable channel apps. Fios, I'm a Fios user, so Fios has its own app. And Fios' app allows you to watch certain channels live. Mostly the non-premium channels live. Okay, so you have to first think, they're going to need to get the licenses to allow them to deliver. And that's why this is not an automatic thing. That's why the cable companies have been very deliberate in rolling out these apps, Cablevision and Fios and all the others. At first, you could only use them at home on their routers as if it were a TV set. And gradually, they renegotiate and get the rights so that now in many of these apps, you can now use them outside of your home network. You've seen this happening. This is a licensing issue. It's not a technology issue. Technology is the same. But then you see the premium channels. Showtime's Anytime app, HBO Go. They have websites, but they also have apps. And is anyone using any of these apps? Have you seen what, or even the Olympic app, right? NBC's Olympic coverage app, which somehow was showing coverage from the Olympic Broadcasting Network. I'm not quite sure what that was all about. But that was NBC's app. What did you have to do? What do you have to do in order to use Showtime's app or HBO's app, or the Olympic app on your mobile device. Anybody try this? What did you have to do?
Well, you have to download it first.
Well, yes.
And then you have to, like, I use the NBC Olympic app, and I had a, it redirected me to put in my BIOS login.
Right. This was not a general, and the same is true if you do Showtime anytime. It's only if you have a Showtime subscription in your cable company.
ESPN 3 is another one.
Yeah, ESPN 3 makes you log into your provider.
So basically, you've got to prove you're already entitled to receive this because you are paying for your cable company subscription. And then ultimately, behind the scenes, there is some sort of... there's some sort of payment happening, right? Why is it that they make you log in? It's so they can determine how many people from this cable company are coming in through this means, how many people from this other cable company are coming in, and then they can get paid extra. Or they could be paid differently. So you see that those apps require a different set of licenses than if you're watching the same content at home. When you sign up for cable, right, you don't have to log in on your TV set to watch the Olympics or to watch ESPN. It's there or it's not. So you watch it on your device sitting next to your TV set, you do. That's still true? Well, because they have not licensed the rights to provide that content other than through their home boxes. Or probably their Wi-Fi, right? So the reasoning is Optimum's license for that content doesn't include streaming outside of its network. It's really that simple. And the way now that they're getting around that is they're having you log in. So that even if you're using somebody else's network, you're here. This is Lifetime, this is Optimal. But if you're a Fios subscriber and you're here, you are able to access as long as you log in through your Fios ID and it authenticates you, even though you're not using Fios's transmission network. That's how they get you to do that. By the way, there are other things for which this is true. Try to watch News 12 online sometime or read Newsday. You've got to have some sort of Optimum login in order to watch News 12, the complete News 12 streaming online. Yeah, isn't that a pain? Newsday went behind a paywall early, and here's my advice to you. It's a lot cheaper, just get it online. That's what we did. If you have, just on a pure basis, right, Newsday can choose whether or not to license you the content online. And at this point, Newsday is essentially an afterthought for the Cablevision empire. But we discovered probably what you did, which is if you don't have a weekly 7-day subscription to Newsday, just have the weekends, you're not good enough to read Newsday online. Your Newsday account will not be authorized, and you don't have the ability to, and if you have News 12, right? But if you have Cablevision, you can do it all. So what we did was we stopped getting Newsday entirely, we just get it online 7 days, it's much cheaper. And it's cheaper for them because they don't have to print me one and they don't have to pay a delivery person to send me one. But they own the content. But Newsday is also interesting because Newsday is not just Newsday writers. It's especially not because they've cut their staff to the bone. You've got Reuters and AP stories, and they have to license those not only for their newspaper, but they have to license those stories to deliver them online. It's a different use. And through the Newsday app, it's a different use. And to email you updates, different use. All of these different uses must be incorporated into a license agreement. Online gaming might be, you know, whether it's an online casino, well, gaming could be two things. This is, by the way, as you get into the business world, if you are faced with an online gaming question, ask whether we're talking about gaming or gambling, because the gambling industry uses the nicer word gaming. But whichever way you're going, whether you're talking about World of Warcraft and Minecraft or you're talking about casino, there may be IP involved for which there has to be a license. And that's not necessarily a website. But it's still a use of the internet. There's another, the gambling side of gaming is another really interesting licensing, in the broader sense, issue. Many, many casinos now in Nevada and in New Jersey have been permitted by their local gambling regulators to offer online gambling. So they're on the internet. The internet is worldwide, right? Anybody know anything about this? Are you able from this room, not that I'm recommending it because you will probably lose all your tuition, are you able from this room to log into a Nevada casino and access it online? What? Irrelevant. It's not our network that's the issue. You do. Same is true for New Jersey, I think. I was driving through New Jersey the other day, and I saw a billboard saying, you know, gamble at our online casinos. But I'm fairly certain that they're geographically limited. So how are they doing that? When Nevada launched its online gambling a couple year or two ago, the deal they struck with the state gaming authority was that they would geolocate. They would look at the IP addresses to make sure, to the extent possible, that the geolocation of that computer was within the state of Nevada. The databases are pretty good now. That's how you could be on a website that could tell you, find signals in Islip, New York, because the IP addresses, most IP addresses now are, at least not the ones that are assigned to your phone necessarily, but that are assigned to your home, those networks are pretty well mapped. And so they can, with some 90-plus degree of certainty, determine that a particular network is in or outside of Nevada. So that's how they do it. But that's a license. It's not an IP license. It's a license that we sort of talked about at the beginning. It's a license to do business, and a license to do business with certain people. But there are also IP licenses involved there, and they may be geographically limited as well. Streaming media, in the broadest sense. Handheld devices, mobile. It's a different use than a website. It may be a website, it may be something else. Instant messaging. Well, we've seen the value of instant messaging apps this week, right? WhatsApp, which is, I thought WhatsApp was simply an app. I thought it was about what apps are out there, but maybe that wasn't it. But it sold for a couple billions? $19 billion! Why are we here? Why aren't we all learning how to code apps? They need lawyers too. They do. But IM may not just be the words that people are saying. There could be pictures. And the ability to provide those pictures. When Instagram, when you post a picture to Instagram, the terms of service have you as the IP owner, the photographer, licensing to Instagram the right to transmit that photo. For that matter, if you send a photo through a text message, your terms of use with your carrier include your license of your copyrighted photo to permit your carrier to transmit it. Otherwise, it has no rights to do it. Those require licenses. Voice over IP. Those are also uses of the internet. So when you are, this is where it really gets weird. Because the telephone system and the internet are essentially the same now. Many of us, if we have something that is quote unquote a landline, it's actually going through our cable network. Optimum voice. Optimum voice is voice over the internet through your cable system.
Is Verizon different?
Verizon is different to a certain extent because Verizon had... I say this as someone who is a Verizon customer.
I am too.
The answer is sort of... The reason Verizon is sort of different is because it started with the infrastructure for telephones. Right? And it's switching from copper wires that carry this much data to fiber optics that carry this much data. But you can still sign up from Verizon for just telephone service. For a while I had Optimum Cable and Verizon telephone. I'm a traditionalist. I want a landline. And I was very loath, actually, to switch away from copper telephone service. And I was right, because after Hurricane Sandy, had I still had my copper lines, I would have had telephone service, even if I didn't have electricity. But because I had switched to fiber 6 hours or so after the power went, the battery went on my phone system, and that was the end of my phone line. So Verizon's different just because of where it started. But Cablevision is purely internet, but it also provides voice service. Now, your business, now we've talked about, in copyright, we talked about hold music licensing, remember? So you get a license from ASCAP or BMI or whomever, or you hire, you pay for hold music service, and it comes with the license that the hold music company got. And that license is for use in a telephone service. And then you switch over to Optimum Voice. Does your license cover broadcasting that over the internet? Or someone calls into your traditional hold music from a voice over IP line. Are you violating the license for your hold music because you are transmitting it now over the internet? I don't know. It depends on the words of the license. But if you are a business and you're negotiating, you're buying a, you know, getting a hold system, you want to think about delivery mechanisms because you're no longer just over the telephone system. You're now providing it online. The fact that we have internet phone systems has changed things in all sorts of really subtle and weird ways. There used to be a thing called long distance costs. It used to cost more to call further. Some of you may, in the dim reaches, may remember the fact that you used to have to ask someone's permission to make a long distance call because it cost more money. Now it doesn't. How could we have the idea of having customer service call centers in other countries was not even remotely cost effective before voice over IP, before the fact that we eliminated long distance charges. Now if someone has a landline, unless you're calling some other country, and even there, if you get the right online phone service, it doesn't cost any more. My daughter rented a, we rented her a cell phone when she went to Israel in October with family friends. And when she called us, it was a local call. We got her a phone here. It had a 516 number. And she, I don't remember if it was she could call us and it was essentially a local call or unlimited or we could call her. When my wife and I were college students and we went to Israel in 1988, we used to have to set a time with our parents where they would call us on a particular payphone because it was so much more expensive for us to call them and we'd be putting coins in till the time, you know, they could, it was expensive, but they could call us. You have no idea, unless you've sort of lived through the transition. The fact that you're listening to the radio now and people are calling in from other countries to radio shows, they're listening online, and then they're calling over the internet. It doesn't cost anything. This has been a huge revolution, obviously, in many areas. But understand, this is another use of the internet. And so if what you're licensing, whether it's content or whether it's a patent, if it's a patent for use in telephone service, does the license include that? It better. If you're drafting a patent for telephone-related things, and you want your patent to be valuable to your client, you had better, in your claims, not limit its use to the telephone network. Because that same device in that same use is going to, or somebody else's invention is going to use a different network. And if you have limited your claims to the telephone network, they're going to invent right around you and use voice over IP. Social networking is another use of the internet that is not necessarily the web. Well, take a look at your mobile telephone. Let's see if we can find one. I wonder if we can find the Verizon Wireless Terms of Service. Let's ask the internet. Let's ask Bing. Okay. Come on. Slow computer. So, while I'm waiting for my slow computer to allow me to do something, all right, there are reserved rights in copyright. Copyright holders have the right to either permit or restrict people from doing all sorts of things, copying, adapting, broadcasting, right? Retransmitting, all of those things. This is the website. This is not the phone service. But if you post a photo, this might be. If you post a photo, the community. Okay? Let's see. Can't really find, but if you text a photo to a friend, right? Your phone is taking that photo. Usually it's compressing that photo and it's retransmitting that photo. It's adapting and retransmitting and making a copy in order to do what you say, text to a friend. Well, it's your service provider that is doing all of those things at your request. But the request is not a license grant. And you will see, if you look at the Verizon Wireless, I can't find an actual terms of use. I don't think that's going to be it either, but this is all website stuff. But if you sign up for a phone, there'll be a contract. And in that contract, one of the things you're going to be asked to do is grant them the rights to retransmit. It's not just your pictures. If you get on the phone and you declaim a poem, an original poem that you were writing at that very moment, and speaking into your phone, they're retransmitting your copyrighted content. They're retransmitting. No, that's not. I'm not saying they're recording, but they're retransmitting. To the extent that what you are saying is copyrightable. If I were to stand here and make a phone and come up with a poem, for that matter, you know, if I'm lecturing, ultimately, they are providing you with a service, including the service of transmitting your copyrighted works, whether it's your spoken word, although generally if you're just speaking, it wouldn't be copyrighted because it's not in tangible form, but your photographs, or if you write down a poem and then speak it into your phone, you've got to give them the rights, and you do. When you sign up for a phone, you're granting them the rights. It'll be somewhere in the fine print. They have whatever rights you grant them. Well, you have to see. There were all sorts of, was it Instagram? There was a big controversy a couple of years ago. I think it was Instagram. They revised their terms of use. And the way they, and it was clumsy lawyer writing. It was not, they weren't looking, but it made it seem as if they were reserving the rights or gaining the rights to take your photos and put them into a book that they would go off and sell for their own profits without giving you any money. That wasn't, let's see if we can find it. I think. You agree that a business or other entity may pay us to display your username, likeness, photos, along with any associated metadata and or actions you take in connection with paid or sponsored content or promotions without any compensation to you. So this was a major, major controversy. No, I don't want to see an ad, thank you. Terms of service cheat sheet. So this was all about the rights that the services get from you. Users keep the rights to their photos? Yes. Terms of service contains clause about repurposing user content. Twitter, yes. Flickr, no. Instagram, yes. Facebook, less. So here's what Twitter says. By submitting, posting, or displaying content on or through the services, you grant us a worldwide, non-exclusive, royalty-free license with the right to sub-license to use, copy, reproduce, process, adapt, modify, publish, transmit, display, and distribute such content in any and all media or distribution methods now known or later developed. You agree that this license includes the right for Twitter to provide, promote, and improve the services and to make content submitted to or through the services available to other companies, organizations, or individuals who partner with Twitter for the syndication, broadcast, distribution, or publication of such content on other media and services, subject to our terms and conditions for such content use. Such additional uses by Twitter or other companies, organizations, or individuals who partner with Twitter may be made with no compensation paid to you with respect to the content that you submit, post, transmit, or otherwise make available through the services. Excuse me? They'd better, because otherwise, when Twitter agrees with the Library of Congress that it is going to provide all tweets to the Library of Congress, it's not going to have the rights to do that. And if Twitter works with aggregating websites to show tweets, it's not going to be allowed to do that either, unless it reserves these rights. This is not saying it's going to go ahead and publish the book of tweets. That assumes, of course, that you have copyright protection in a tweet, which is an interesting argument. But a photo that you post, do they have the rights? Well, you know, if they are allowing people to connect to the Twitter service through other applications like Hootsuite and Seismic and all the others, and or they allow you to get your tweets through text messages, including the photos, then they have to be able to sub-license your content in order to make that happen. And that's what this says. Sure, don't bother. You don't have to. Nobody's forcing you to text a photo or to use Instagram or Twitter. Nobody's forcing you. But if you do, don't you want your things to go where all the other tweets go? Or all the other Instagram photos go? They need this in order to make that happen. And so that's why this controversy wasn't really a controversy so much as a clumsy language or a poor explanation, poor understanding. There are all sorts of challenges. Some of this is language, some of this is just PR. But understand that those words in the terms of service are a license issue involving various media, right? Various uses of this network. And that's why they had that very broad language of, what was it that they said here? In any and all media or distribution methods now known or later developed. So when we get to telepathic Twitter, they don't have to renegotiate these terms. And there are others. This is just, the internet is just a methodology. It's a railroad network. It's a telephone network. And your license needs to consider the various methodologies that are going to use this network. So how is it used? How do we see IP used online? It may be the content of a website. Look at your Facebook homepage. Look at all the different types of intellectual property owned by how many different types of people that become part of this collection. Every time a friend posts a photo or links to someone else's photo or image or cat picture or video. Just take a look at Facebook homepage. I'm not going to do it because I'd have to log in and I don't want to leave my login here. Don't look at now. When you get home, look at your Facebook homepage and count the potential number of IP owners whose rights are represented in that single page. All the photographers, all the illustrators, all the video production people, all the authors who are writing, not, you know, just eating breakfast, but you see people write long things. Those are copyrightable. So much of that. Or look at news services. All the different pieces that go into a website. Advertising. The ads, as annoying as they may be, are IP. They contain IP, graphics, slogans, trademarks. The delivery mechanism may be patentable itself, or maybe patented itself. The software to deliver the ad may be subject to copyright. All there. Banner ads, product placement, text, all sorts of things. Within email, again, any graphic email is going to include IP. And it may be owned by the publisher, the sender of the email, and it may be included from someone else's. IP is used in the technology that runs the internet, not the actual IP. This gets a little confusing, I will say, because IP is also internet protocol. The IP address is not intellectual property address. But anyway, but all of the technology that makes the internet go may or may not be subject to intellectual property rights. Music and video, names and trademarks, it's all there. There's a lot to say here, and that's why this is going to be a two-class talk. But one of the challenges that we as attorneys face in advising our clients about use online of intellectual property is that so many of the business relationships that underlie that right to use are formed online. They're not negotiated in person. They're not hand signed. There are all these relationships that come up, and some of them are done in a specific way. Some of them are done in an implied way, in an automatic way. There are lots of ways where business relationships that include IP rights get established for the internet. Sometimes I will say, no, I shouldn't say never. Sometimes you do have actual written agreements. You could be certain that Netflix and Comcast did not have a click here to agree deal. They negotiated this. There are people that are probably hand signing documents. And yes, it involved IP rights over the internet, but the agreement itself was a real world written agreement. But though we do have click-throughs, online agreements, click here to agree. Don't use this if you agree. Click here to join Twitter or Facebook or Instagram. Whether or not you have something akin to a signature is a legal question, actually. Sometimes relationships are formed by code. What do I mean by that? How is it that, well, some of you are Facebook users. How is it that you post, that when you put up your Facebook update, it shows a picture like a cartoon or a photo or something else? Has anyone like posted a photo to Facebook? You post a link to a website and what happens? You get a thumbnail. How'd that happen? How is it that a picture showed up when all you did was put in a link?
You can opt out of that field,
I didn't ask that. I'm asking the methodology. Did you agree to something? Did you license that photo? That thumbnail picture? Did you do anything specific to make it actually show up? How did it show up? Did you ever license the link? This is how it happens. You put up a link, a URL, an address, and Facebook's display software checks out that link, figures out one or more photos that are associated with that link, and displays them automatically. Legally, there are some good arguments in favor of thumbnails as fair use of some kind. But my point is that you, the user, making that happen, didn't sign anything, didn't agree to anything, didn't do anything except post a link. Type a link. Or copy and paste a link. And the software, the technology, took care of the rest. And suddenly, you've got some sort of relationship. You have caused someone else's intellectual property to appear on a screen. By code. Did you have a question or a thought?
I was just thinking of this with the Law Review website. I just put in one of those buttons that you can share on Facebook, Twitter, and all that. I was just thinking if like somebody includes that button on their website and they have something that may be copyrighted, by including that button and allowing you to share it, is that a right to transmit their content?
What I mean, are you sharing a link or are you sharing the content? Right, and then there's, but then there'll be some sort of a thumbnail that usually appears.
Yeah.
It's an interesting question. It's an interesting question whether in enabling that linking, you are somehow enabling the infringement of intellectual property in the form of a thumbnail. Now, happily, as I say, there's a good argument that a thumbnail as part of a link is likely to be fair use. But it's kind of scary in a sense that just by providing a link, that happens. Lots of third parties. Okay, so I've set the stage, and then we'll get into how we make this happen and what the international issues add to it in our next class. All right, have a good night, safe home.